This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor who was part of the team that prosecuted the Blind Sheikh and others for the first bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. He also is the author of a number of books, including Willful Blindness, a memoir of jihad, as well as a recent Encounter broadside entitled How Obama Embraces Islam's Sharia Agenda. We want to get his thoughts primarily today on the upcoming hearings from the House Homeland Security Committee looking into radical Islam and its influence on terrorism and why there's such a controversy that's erupted, at least in the media and in some Islamic organizations, about these hearings. And Andy, it's always great to have you with us.
Greg, good to be here. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. And it didn't take long for there to be a huge outcry about these hearings. Obviously, if you look at recent attacks or any attacks really over the last 30 to 40 years, many of them, of course, have had a radical Islamic bent to them. Why do you think we're seeing so many people, either in Islamic groups or just in politics in general, having such a problem with these hearings?
Well, the Islamic groups who are protesting are the same Islamic groups that protest every time a Muslim is indicted for anything. So I think their complaint is basically a lot of noise, probably self-interested noise, in the sense that, if you're going to really look at Islamic ideology or Islamist ideology and the Sharia agenda behind it and the people who have promoted it, and it's this ideology that also promotes terrorism, that's going to put the light of suspicion on these groups. And Americans will, I think, properly ask, why is it that we keep turning to these groups as the basically the bridge of the government into the Islamic community when there are plenty of patriotic, pro-American Muslims who don't share their agenda. So I think when you're hearing complaints from, the likes of CARE, which was identified as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Hamas financing case that the government successfully prosecuted a couple of years ago, and many of whose members have actually been caught up in terrorism investigations, it's only natural that they should be the ones complaining, because if you're really going to shine a light on this, they're some of the people you'll be shining a light on.
Why the cover, you think, from Democrats, mostly Democrats, I should say, on Capitol Hill, and the Obama administration even sending out its deputy national security advisor to a D.C. area mosque trying to point out the fact that it's very supportive of Islam in general?
Well, they've been very supportive of these Islamist groups for a number of years. President Obama has done aggressive outreach, I think, to all the wrong Islamist groups since he came in, beginning with sending one of his top advisors, Valerie Jarrett, to give the keynote address at the convention of the Islamic Society of North America, yet another organization that was identified as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Hamas financing trial. Yet the year after the convictions in that case, he had Valerie Jarrett giving the keynote address there. The Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, was invited to Obama's speech in Egypt. So it's been a big part of the administration's agenda to reach out to these groups. And again, you can argue the point whether Islamic outreach is a good idea or a bad idea in the sense of being any kind of an effective counterterrorism strategy. But I think that what these hearings hopefully will show is that America has a lot of friends in the American Muslim community, a lot of patriotic Americans in that community. I can personally say, as someone who prosecuted terrorists in the 90s, that without the help of patriotic Americans, we couldn't have gotten those cases done. And what I hope comes out of these hearings is that we'll start to realize that there are the right Muslims and the wrong Muslims for us to be cultivating, and we've spent a long time cultivating the wrong Muslims.
So you think we're only hearing grief from mainly the ones that have something to hide here? Or do you see that some just think that their religion's under attack? Because as I look at this, I would think that most Christians, if, say, the Klan or the Westboro Baptist Church were coming under congressional scrutiny, they wouldn't be raising howls of protest with this. But it seems like when it's radical Islam, that people who would normally be considered traditional Muslims, or at least defenders of the impression that what we see from radical Islam is distinct from traditional Islam, we're not necessarily seeing that as much.
No, we're not. But, you know, there's a couple of things about that. You know, number one, it's dangerous for them to complain. I'm not saying that I'd rather they were courageous and took on the people who are the big problem here, which are the Islamists. But it's dangerous for them to do that. In Islam, apostasy is considered to be a capital offense, and people have been killed for a lot less than simply not towing the party line. So there's, you know, it's not without risk for people to, you know, step up to the plate and criticize these guys. It's tragic that they won't do more of it, but I would just say to my friends in the Islamic community, and I think you know, we all have lots of friends in that community, that if they're upset by this, the people they ought to be upset about are the people who are giving Islam the reputation that it's gotten for something that's associated with these with this raft of terrorism that we've been dealing with for the last 20 years, and with a movement that wants to institute Sharia law in the United States. And if they are unhappy about that, the person to be complaining about is not Peter King or me or any other critic. It's the CARES, the ISNAs and the Islamist organizations that are associated with the Muslim Brotherhood.
A couple of minutes left with Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, the author of Willful Blindness. And Andy, do you think we're at the point, because of the controversy, that the controversy will overshadow any substantive conclusions from this hearing? And if you were able to ask some questions at the hearing, what would you want to know?
Well, I think the criticism has already had some effect. And two of the people I would have thought would have been essential to have as witnesses at these hearings are Steve Emerson and Robert Spencer, who I think are probably the two top authorities on this phenomenon of radicalization that we have in the United States. So I think the focus on the hearings, that is to, you know, just call Muslims and government officials in order to get insight into the phenomenon of radicalization and leave aside the people who have spent a couple of decades studying it carefully and know more about it than anyone else in the country, was a poor choice on Congressman King's part. That having been said, I salute him for, you know, raising a spotlight here, and it's a much-needed spotlight. It's the first time that Congress has actually undertaken to grapple with the ideology that fuels the threat that we've been up against for the last two decades, and I think he's to be commended for doing that. How it'll go, I think we just have to wait and see. I'm hoping that the fact that, you know, Emerson and Spencer were left on the sidelines doesn't mean that we're not going to get, you know, some good, healthy, substantive scrutiny of this phenomenon, and it's vitally needed.
Andy, between the backlash to these hearings, as well as the response from the administration to the Hassan shootings at Fort Hood, where they've taken great pains not to label that an act of Muslim extremism, they refuse to label what just happened last week in Frankfurt as a terrorist attack. How does that impact our effort to win this war?
Well, you know, I'm not much for wars of ideas and that sort of jazz. I think that, you know, if you want to have a war, the idea is, it's not that anyone wants to have a war, but I mean, if you find yourself in a war, the idea is to defeat your enemy and break his will. It's not to, like, win a war of ideas. I think that's sort of just an excuse for not having the stomach to fight a real war. The prescription for victory in what has been called the war on terror was laid out by President Bush about 6 days after the 9/11 attacks. It's never really changed. It's simple. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it's simple. You have to attack the terrorist cells wherever they are, and you have to treat regimes that support terrorism as enemies of the United States. That doesn't mean you have to invade everyone, but you leave all your options on the table, and you move as hard as you can, in as many ways as you can, toward regime change, because these terrorist organizations can't project the kind of power they project without being supported by regimes at a governmental level. That's how you win the war. All this other jazz about outreach and the war of ideas, and, you know, that stuff gives me a headache, because it just seems to me it's rationalizations for not doing what has to be done to protect the country.
Andy, we'll certainly be watching the hearings closely. Thank you very much for your insights today.
My pleasure, Greg. Take care.
You too, sir. Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, was part of the team that prosecuted the blind sheik and others for the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. He's also the author of Willful Blindness, a memoir of jihad. He writes for National Review Online, and he's also the author of a recent Encounter Broadside entitled How Obama Embraces Islam's Sharia Agenda. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.